Hi, Channel 9 Live at Mix 10. Today was an incredible day. Dean Hakamovich, the announcements were just amazing.
Thank you.
We also have another very special guest. You're going to learn a lot about him, Giorgio Sardo. And before we get started, this is all about you. Please tweet your questions to @CH9Live, twitter.com, or just go to the coffee house on Channel 9. Or if you're in the audience, yell out questions, I'll ask you. But the point is for you to interact. Now let's get right into business. Dean, today, amazing.
Thank you.
So I think one question to ask you is, why all of a sudden do we want to support HTML5 when in the past we've seemed to kind of go back and forth with wanting to support HTML5? What's going on?
You know, our HTML5 involvement goes back years and years and years. I mean, we Microsoft, were involved in the HTML5 spec, I think before it was very hip and popular and mainstream. There's a co-chair involved in it. There's lots of comments in the working group. I think it's accelerated over the last year plus for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I think that enough different web technologies have started to get mature enough and people are getting used to the patterns that it's getting more attention. But we've been involved for a very, very long time.
Excellent. And so one question I would have then is, how far are you going to take it? So there's this thing called Canvas,
mm-hmm,
that I know a lot of people have been asking about. You didn't talk about it explicitly today. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Well, it turns out that all of your graphics are hardware accelerated on IE9. And so the demo that a few people have walked up to me and asked, the rotating logos at the beginning,
uh-huh,
right? Those are PNGs. That's a very old-fashioned web graphic.
Sure.
It supports some nice transparency and other attributes. So all the graphics, the PNGs, the JPEGs, SVG is hardware accelerated. We showed how the video is hardware accelerated.
Yes.
And the good news is that all the graphics that IE9 supports will be hardware accelerated.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we also pointed out that there's what's available in the preview today, and we previewed HTML5 video. Mm-hmm. And so there's more to come in the preview.
Absolutely.
I'll just leave it that way with a big smile.
Excellent.
I'm going to use this as the opportunity
Please.
To introduce
yes.
someone. I am proud to introduce Giorgio here. So that rotating logos demo that Steven showed early on, the source code actually didn't come from the IE team. It came from Giorgio. You should tell the story, because you did the original implementation.
Yeah, so in the first implementation, first of all, I want to be very clear. I didn't have the IE logo. I had Dean's face from Mix08, and it was awesome, because like you could see an army of Deans, like all aligned and spinning around. That was fun, and I promise I will publish it on the web if you're okay. I guess you are.
Yeah, thanks for asking me here.
Yeah, I will do it, so just for information. So what's behind that demo? Like, how does it work? Why is it so different, the result? If you look at the source code, and you can go like on the IE Test Drive website and you can look yourself to the source code, it's basically just dynamic HTML. So HTML with like JavaScript, with CSS, and with JPEG, with PNGs.
It's not that long. It's what, 500 lines?
No, even less. Oh, I cannot write 500 lines now. It's probably like 100 or so.
Okay.
And so basically there is a loop, and in the loop we are moving those images around, and we're just changing the CSS property on those images. And the idea comes from samples from the community. So I browse a lot on the web. I keep searching, for example, for good things that we can showcase our tools, or we can like see how our tools perform with. And as I found this website, like in I think it was in France, that a lot of like really cool dynamic HTML scenarios,
mm-hmm,
but they weren't very performant in most of the browsers. And so I thought, why is this happening? And does all the work that Dean, your team is doing help to accelerate those scenarios? And the result, I was like surprised. I was amazed to see live the performance in the rendering. And I think that when I think about like the developers, the end scenarios that the developers can use, having like IE9 and tools that and browsers that are increasingly faster, like, not just with the JavaScript, but also with the rendering engine,
sure,
basically create like a new set of scenarios that previously they weren't even just possible to build because you didn't have the performance that you need to build those. So I'm really looking forward now to see the next set of web applications that will come out of the developer community.
Absolutely.
So are there questions coming in? Or
there should be questions coming in. Hey, my friends, come on. You know how to use Twitter. Twitter.com, @CH9Live. Type in under 140 characters. We have Dean and Giorgio here. Come on, what's going on?
So,
but I have questions.
Okay, go ahead.
I mean, one of the questions I would ask, something that's happening during the execution of that wonderful sample is JavaScript execution.
Yes.
And the beautiful thing is that JavaScript is compiled.
Right.
Talk to me a little bit about the new JavaScript engine.
Okay, so Chakra is a very interesting architecture and execution in a couple of ways. You go to a web page, and there's some script, and immediately that script starts being interpreted. So Chakra has got an interpreter, mm-hmm. right, baseline. And so the code can just start executing. What it does then, right, is it kicks off this background process, right, and then Windows goes and runs on another core.
Nice.
And that's a completely independent process. And what's interesting is that it goes through, and first it does a code analysis to figure out, okay, well, there's all this script. How much is worth compiling?
Sure.
Right. But it approaches that in a very different way from what I'll call classic JIT. So if you read about JIT, or just-in-time technology, and this goes back to the 1980s and all the original work in Smalltalk. And
sure.
You should ask Stephen about this if you ever get a chance.
I would love to.
He worked on that. What's interesting is classic JIT, if you read the Wikipedia article, describes how the just-in-time aspect is where does it happen? Where, when does it happen? Does it happen on my machine as a developer or on your machine when you get to my code?
Sure.
The connotation of JIT that goes along with it is it's just done kind of on the fly. It's not high-quality code. What's really interesting about the Chakra architecture is by putting it onto another core where it can run in parallel, you can take the time, and you know we're talking about very small slices of time, right?
Certainly.
You can take the time to have higher quality code gen and higher quality output of code that'll run a lot faster. Now, you'd say, like, why haven't we done this before? Well, it goes down to how jitters spend all of their time today. I talked a little bit about this at the keynote. It turns out that browsers have this tough situation. If you spend too little time jitting, users wait.
Yes.
Because you don't jit enough, well, you're stuck running this really slow interpreter. Now, if you jit too much, users wait.
Yeah.
Because they're sitting there going, I'm trying to log into my mail program. What are you doing? And the browser would like to go,
I'm compiling some script.
And so you're in this race where you're spending all this time managing what you're doing instead of taking advantage of all the hardware on the PC.
Excellent. And that essentially is what we're doing. We have questions from the internet. N. Hajianis, the demo was very impressive.
Thank you.
Do you see the implementation of the GPU in 3D rendering giving way to more in-browser gaming?
Wow, absolutely. I think about what you can do with the GPU in the browser now, and I'm not sure how well it came through in the webcast, but the rotating videos with opacity.
Incredible.
And it's funny, we always think about this in terms of gaming, and you realize that, you know, games are great, but why should only the gamers get all the good graphics?
Agreed.
Right? I look at some of the things Office 2010 is doing, and I go, I just want my web experience. I would love going up to Netflix and choosing a video mm-hmm. to be a lot more rich and interactive. So I think that would just be huge.
Excellent.
And I think the other thing that helps here is like support for SVG, right? So with SVG, like, it's a great platform to build games. And because SVG is hardware accelerated as well as HTML5, mm-hmm. you can still leverage the same performance and same capabilities, and at the same time having support for scalable vectorographic graphics.
Awesome. So right. Larry Law, Lightbulb is what we call him. How is the new JavaScript engine different from Firefox and Chrome?
Okay, well, I described a lot of what we're doing. I'm going to very briefly describe the other guys.
Sure.
Mostly out of respect. I'd rather have them describe their technology because it's very, I just don't like speculating.
Well, Lars has been on Channel 9. He goes deep.
Okay, so here's some of the differences. So there are plain old interpreters, and then there's a broad spectrum of jitting technology. Chrome's got some interesting jitting technology in it. The Jaeger monkey is the latest thing.
Yes.
There's Nitro technology that I think the Mozilla guys, the Mozilla guys are blogging about this in order to help disambiguate what's going on. I think the biggest difference is going from a straight interpreter to a JIT that's running in process where you need to wait for it and all that, versus a higher quality code gen, higher quality compilation that happens in the background in parallel, so you're not waiting on it. Look, think about one of the great things about desktop applications. Mm-hmm. When you run Excel or you run Outlook or you run a game, right?
Sure.
That's the output of the stuff that you're running came out of a real compiler. Now, it takes a long time to do that build. Now, you think about going up to a rich web app, mm-hmm. and you don't want to type in your name and password and hit submit and then have it compile.
You just want it to run. Absolutely.
And so one of the biggest difference in comparison is having higher quality compilation, like the kind that desktop applications rely on, happening in the background. All right, so I should have shorter answers.
No, that's a wonderful answer. And again, dual pipeline execution, it's new. All right, we have Oxon. Interesting. Okay. What happens to Silverlight once HTML5 grows to critical mass? Great question. What has been taken from Silverlight and put into HTML? Anything?
Okay, so what happens to Silverlight once HTML5 grows to critical mass? Fundamentally,
it's a great question.
I think it's a great question. What happens is that developers continue to choose. I think a lot of the examples that we showed around same markup, same output.
Sure.
You know, a same markup, slightly different output, slightly different markup, really struggling to get even more similar output. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what makes, you know, the what I'll call the dream of standards, the ideal of standards, really, really hard. Developers choose.
Okay.
Developers who want to use exactly the same markup on, you know, different devices, operating systems, browsers, they'll choose to use a plugin. And it makes sense for them to choose a plugin to get that exact same markup everywhere. Over time, as the same markup, same output pattern that I described improves, you know, those choices might change, but we don't really know yet. The second part of the question was, what's gone from Silverlight into HTML? That's a fascinating question. You should have, you know, someone up here from Silverlight at some point talking about how they're having that conversation, because I'm not familiar with it.
And we were talking about previously with Damaris from the Silverlight team, and it's interesting to see how there are overlaps between Silverlight and IE, but still the scenarios that we're covering are different, and we give to the developers the opportunity to choose what they want to build.
Cool.
And with Silverlight today, you can build some code that, because of the plugin model, works in the same way across browsers. Mm-hmm. And that's where HTML5 is going. That's the dream for the web, being able to code once, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and run the same way across browsers.
Right on. And we're all in with that, to quote Sanofsky and Balmer. Yeah. All right, so we have a lot of tweets, dear Dean. So let's answer them all. Bo Martinez. Why the sudden move towards rigorous standards compliance?
Okay, so tell me what else developers want. I mean, people are really enjoying sitting there trying to write one line of CSS to get a yellow border.
Totally.
And they're going, oh, right, I need to do dash WebKit now. Wait, no, I need to do dash. No, they switched the order of the arguments here. The thing about the standards compliance, and what I'm going to recommend, it's scrolled, but Bo, like the thing I'm going to recommend is go and look at the standards timelines. It's interesting to think about how the standards evolve over time. The 2001 browser did a really great job at the 2001 standards. As I said, a lot of things have happened since 2001.
True.
And you know, going through and saying, well, you know, how does IE deal with the standards? Just look at the timeline. One of the most powerful things you can do is just draw a line on a piece of paper, mark off the years, and start going through the W3C site, see where the fits and starts have been.
Mm-hmm.
Read the Wikipedia articles. Look at the standards that have gone from one state of completion to the next and have then gone back.
Okay.
Now, we always talk about CSS 2.1. We don't talk about CSS 2.0 that much.
No. Good point.
Interesting, huh? Or, you know, people are like, we're doing SVG. And there's a question on the way over here. Which version of SVG?
Yes.
Are you doing 1.1, 1.2, tiny, full? I'm just going, we're doing SVG 1.1, and there's this sub-revision to it. So there's a lot to get bogged down in. The rigor, you used the word rigorous in your question. I want to be very clear about the rigor. The rigor is what's absolutely important to developers. You want the same markup to work, and the path to get there are these test suites. I think the industry, Microsoft contributed over 7,000 tests. We ended up with over 8,000 tests in the W3C test suite.
Amazing.
That's why we have an expectation that the USB stick will actually work and not make the PC explode, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just, oh, somebody wrote a standard.
Sure.
But they have PlugFest and the community comes together to make sure it really works.
Absolutely. All right, more questions. At Planet Call, cool name. What stops IE9 from working on XP? Why is IE so tied up with the OS?
Okay, kind of two separate questions, but you know, we'll go with it.
Modern
browsers require a modern operating system. There are two very specific things I'll call out that are Windows Vista and later facilities that I think are super important for browsers. One involves security. Yep, I'm going to talk about security again. Integrity levels. Protected mode, which started in IE7 on Windows Vista and is available in IE8 on Vista and Windows 7, is super important. Think of it as this amazing sandboxing technique. You might be running as administrator, your browser isn't. And that requires a bunch of security infrastructure that didn't exist when Windows XP shipped. The other example has to do with all this graphics stuff we keep talking about. Modern graphics infrastructure really started with Windows Vista and everything that DirectX did on Windows Vista and the driver model.
Absolutely.
And that's how you tap into, you know, a few billion dollars of PC hardware ecosystem innovation and R&D. So that's the XP thing.
Okay. And yeah, and that's actually both of them. So we have, who's next? Mark Strzok.
Okay.
What is Microsoft doing technically to get users off of IE6, automatic upgrade, JavaScript plugin for web devs to upgrade users? What's going on?
So when we shipped Internet Explorer 7, there's a wave of Windows update, automatic update,
sure,
you know, depending on how you signed up, notifications that went out to users. An important thing to remember here is users choose. We love talking about how developers choose their technologies, mm-hmm, right? Should I do HTML5? Should I do Silverlight? Well, users choose their browsers. And so we had a wave of automatic update notifications, not just installing the browser, but notifications. And users got to choose, hey, do I want to go to IE7 or not? Very similar thing with IE8 in terms of users getting notifications. We put a lot of energy that you may or may not see on the consumer front with IT folks, going to IT departments, going to enterprises, going to businesses saying, wow, you're responsible for 300 desktops, Charles. You really want to get off of IE6.
Sure.
Here are all these great benefits. Here are the security benefits and the performance benefits of moving on. Technically, it's the automatic updates. There's a lot of other stuff going on to get the word out.
Excellent.
And frankly, we count on the community to help too.
Yeah, exactly.
If you guys want the automatic script to put on your page to say, here's how to go get IE8,
send mail.
Send me an email and I will send you the script, I promise.
Excellent.
Right. You have one under construction.
So we are currently, like, part of our evangelism is also to go after IE6 users and educate them about the fact that there is IE8. But we cannot do this just by ourselves. We need the support, lastly, from other sides, from other developers. And so we are putting together a script that basically will help you to identify IE6 and eventually suggest to your users to upgrade their browser because there is a better version to run the same site.
Excellent. I want to get this. You're the most popular so far. Let's get to Explore MQT.
Okay. How well do others accept and use the tests you contribute? Wow. Awesome question. So we contribute these tests to the W3C, and I assume this is the standards test. And to me, what's super important about tests is to work with browser vendors, other browser vendors, work with the community, work with the standards body. And so we put them out and they're available. We take comments on them. We got a bunch of comments on the CSS 2.1 test that we put up. We've made changes to some of them as part of the submissions and acceptance process with that standards group. In terms of how the other developers are running them, I don't know. We've got a few thousand tests out there. We demonstrated some examples for the 100 or so that we contributed today.
Yeah.
I'm going to recommend that you go to the IE Test Drive site. There's a link to go to the IE Test Center. One thing that we learned is that it's good to arrange small numbers of tests in a grid so people can try them out. You can, on your own, with your own set of web browsers, on your own machine, go and try out some of these standards tests. And you can just take the link and put it up in IE8, in the IE9 preview, in Chrome, in Mozilla, in Opera, and try them out. In terms of methodically taking all these tests and integrating them into their engineering process, you know, that's really up to the folks at WebKit, at Chromium, at Apple, at Google, at Mozilla, at all these places. And I haven't seen much in their blogs about it. You should ask them.
Good. So let's continue. So Josh Nock, what do you think is the timeline for HTML5, and when are you going to release IE9?
Okay, so the HTML5 timeline is a super rich question.
Sure.
There are some interviews on the W3C site around, well, when will it converge? And they don't have a super specific timeline in mind right now. It's kind of, you know, the standards process is really focused on consensus. So in terms of when I expect it, when can we expect it, I think that the timeline is years. What we're doing as part of the process is trying to take parts of it that are more ready than others and get those modules out. The folks who work on CSS3, for example, have done a really good job defining CSS3 modules. So it's not this large monolithic spec. You can talk about this module or that module. The slide during the keynote called out specific CSS3 modules because it's easier to think about that way. The timeline for IE9, Well, we've got the preview, the platform preview that's out today. We're going to update the platform preview, so I should really call them platform previews.
Okay.
And our rhythm is very straightforward. We have platform previews on the road to beta, a beta, a release candidate, and then a release.
Excellent.
And what defines the specifics of that timeline is a lot of the feedback that we get from folks.
Absolutely. So download it and play with it. Rick Rat, is it possible to compile JavaScript manually outside of IE9? And if so, is it supported by other browsers?
That is a brilliant question. Today, we don't support pre-compiling JavaScript manually outside of IE9. It's this tension. It's kind of like the point of JavaScript is that you're just handing over the markup. You're handing over all the curly braces and all the variable names and everything. So we don't support that today. It's a really interesting question to work with the ECMA guys. We all know that it's actually ECMAScript, not JavaScript. For ECMAScript 2.6.2, B3, more
often
than
not. Oh my goodness, you said ECMAScript.
I did.
So listen, I want to ask one quick question, because
sorry,
this
Niners.
Is Channel 9. I got to do it. Sorry, guys, but you'll like it. So Doug Crockford's here. We talk. It's fun.
Brilliant guy.
Brilliant, genius guy, a nice guy as well.
Yeah.
So ECMAScript 5,
yes.
Right? ECMA 5. What's going on? Are we going to support it? Are we not going to support it? What's your story?
So ECMAScript 2.6.2 V5.
V5, excuse me.
Also known as ES5 to its
ES5,
closer friend.
That's really what I meant.
It's the next version of JavaScript, basically.
Yeah.
So this is just for context, because not everyone has read Wikipedia the way you have.
And yeah, I spent all my time.
So ES5 is that next step on JavaScript. And frankly, we've been super involved in that committee. Right, Alan Wirfsbrock has been super involved. And the main point of ES5 is similar to the main point of HTML5. If you read the HTML5 spec, or you read, there's a great interview with one of the HTML5 folks on the Web Standards Project page.
Okay.
I'll get the link to you, can post it.
Perfect.
They say, wow, what's the main point of HTML5? Parsing, interoperability, we just want that same markup to work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, ES5 is all around taking all the de facto standards that have evolved around script and just codifying them so it works. So Alan on the JavaScript team at Microsoft went through, wrote this amazing specification that said, here are all the discrepancies between everyone's script engines and how do we want them to work and reconciling them. So we're super involved there. We're obviously working on the code. You saw how it's getting faster.
Yeah.
Right? So we clearly have some work going on there. And the next real set of conversations to have there is really as part of the ECMAScript meetings to go through and figure out, well, where would a test suite go and how do we want this to work? So we are on it, we hear it.
Excellent.
And then
you want I'm,
yeah, well, I'm a developer, so I think
yes, you are.
As a developer, what are the parts of the ECMAScript file that I want now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want now. And one of those that I keep asking questions about is the JSON, native JSON support.
Yes.
Mm. Like we talked in the keynote about having lot of applications that use JSON and data over the cloud, etc. This is something that you introduced in IE8. And I noticed, I was running some of my demos in IE9, and I noticed that the JSON, native JSON support in IE9 is even faster than it was in IE8, which was already faster than any other browser. So kudos to your team.
We should put up a benchmark for that. Maybe.
I think there is a test in the test drive that does exactly that.
Okay.
Hey Dean, I want you to read
the
tweets.
All right. So I'm going to prove that we can have short answers.
Yes,
too.
We can.
Am I going to have a bad online experience if my video hardware isn't good? No, I think you're going to have a fine online experience if your video hardware. Look, I think it's hard to have bad video hardware nowadays. Even if you have a quote unquote low end GPU, you'll have an improved thing with the GPU. If the video hardware really is poor, IE9 falls back. IE9 asks DirectX what to do. DirectX very intelligently falls back to software rendering if there are issues with hardware. When can we expect to see the user interface of IE9? At beta, because the platform preview is all about the platform preview. Is IE9 going to run separate tabs and distinct processes to help app stability? IE8 runs distinct tabs in run separate tabs and separate processes for reliability and stability. Algorithmically, it's very interesting. You don't really want to run every single tab in a completely different process because you pay for that reliability with a lot of working set and performance overhead. So there's a very interesting way we try to balance your reliability and your performance. There's a great blog post. I just need to do a shout out. There's a great blog post from Andy Ziegler on the IE team in the last 2 weeks around loosely coupled IE and effectively the multi-process aspect and how that architecture works. I really recommend reading. I think it'll help that. Now, IE9 will actually do a little bit more there. Will IE9 take help from open source community projects to improve, as several other browsers have done? If yes, what has already taken? Absolutely. And the open source community projects, you know, I think that the most powerful ones are the ones that involve how we determine if code is correct or not. I think that there's this amazing sucking sound when it comes to test suites. And there's this amazing opportunity. I think about all the time and energy that went into arguing around CSS 2.1 before there was actually a test to say, well, what's going on here? Go yes. look at the IE test drive and go to the test center. And you know, you'll see 100-104 tests. And you know, it's incremental. You know, we will contribute more. We want it to be consumable. It really is this open invitation to the community to come and say, look, for the tests you've submitted, you should try to do this. You didn't understand this part of spec. Do this part differently. Mm-hmm. And it's an open invitation to the community to have a conversation at scale. The way to have a conversation at scale is with code.
Yes.
And the most powerful code, frankly, is the test suite. I just need to do another shout out because there's a whole
Please
part
do.
Of the IE team that you don't often hear about. Look, they're the program managers, and they tend to dress well, and they often come to these shows, and they do demos, and they use big words, and I used to be a program manager, and so I respect that. They're the developers. People think of developers as these amazing people, and they are amazing
yes,
people.
Yes, they are.
Right? They write all this amazing code. There's actually another development team inside the IE team.
Interesting.
And they're called SDETs. They're software design engineers, software development engineers in test.
Yes.
And so they write code. The difference is that the code they write doesn't ship out to you on your desktop. The code that they write is running at Microsoft in our test lab because we automate this testing. And so there are these amazing harnesses that run this code to exercise IE. And there's tremendous value in those tests. And I think the open community, the open source community, and the community at large can be unbelievably helpful for all browsers.
That's really
by contributing
incredibly
there.
Interesting.
Is IE9 rendering a new engine away from Trident?
Dun, dun, dun.
Trident is, just for the studio audience, right? Trident is the internal code name that we use to refer to all the larger platform. Trident is rendering and a lot of other things.
Okay.
Right, so it's not really this one-to-one lineup with what people think of as WebKit. Trident has an object model, it supports the object model, and has lots of other bits. The diagram that I had up during the keynote helps kind of draw a line around what is
okay.
Trident. Trident is still Trident. The thing that we do with every release is we rewrite and re-architect, obviously you architect before you write, good chunks of that code in order to solve the most pressing problems. In IE8, there was a new layout engine inside of Trident,
mm-hmm.
And that's what you know enabled CSS 2.1 to happen. Now, inside of IE9, there are larger parts. There are other parts of Trident that we're obviously reworking. For example, Trident is now working natively on top of the DirectX family of APIs, not the GDI family. And there are other changes folks will
Christian
see
Fortini is a face you can put
Absolutely,
on that.
Absolutely, yes.
And the other brilliant people around him.
Okay.
We got another guy. This is kind of funny. What's going on with this?
Okay, quote, I'm kind of asking what MSFT's secret plans for HTML5 really are.
Should we turn the lights down? We're going to talk secret
okay.
now.
And the best part is that there's actually a smiley face at the end of this. So here's the secret plan. The secret plan, and I'm just going to go back to the key line.
Okay.
We love HTML5 so much, we want it to actually work.
Okay.
And so the secret plan is, what if it actually worked? You could write this markup, and you got these amazing next-generation applications, graphically rich, interactive, doing all this great stuff, that could actually run across browsers.
Excellent. Now, here we go. Here we go. This question will not die. So,
how do we best help kill IE6? So look, I'm kind of in the situation where I feel like I'm talking about my brother-in-law, and I need to, you know, be polite. There are limits on what I'm allowed to say publicly, and not. I used to pick on my brother in these things, and I got a note from my mom saying,
"I remember when you did that in one of our videos."
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about IE6. So I think that the best thing we can do collectively is find IE6, find IE6 users, and help them in a hands-on way. I am responsible, we, the IE team collectively, are responsible for servicing IE6, for supporting IE6, for making sure there are security updates available, for making sure that, you know, large corporate customers, and people always go the wrong way when I say corporate.
Yes.
Hospitals.
Yes.
You know, hospitals are running IE6. Nuclear facilities are running IE6.
Yes.
In a very, thankfully, closed environment. And so they have you know, lots of needs to run their particular applications. The best thing that we can do is go through and find the people running IE6 and get them off IE6.
I think
a great way to get people off of IE6 is to get them onto Windows 7.
Right on. Now, on that note, we got to stop. It's great to talk to you, as always.
Thank you.
Giorgio,
thank you.